Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We are broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're also podcasting. The website is santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can listen to the show anytime you want to, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. You can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Later in the program, Robert Knott will be here, speaking of the arts, as he is just about every Friday. Right now, by telephone, I'd like to welcome David Barsamian. He's the host of Alternative Radio, which airs on Tuesday nights on KSFR at 6:30, and he's the author of and editor of many books, the latest of which is Targeting Iran, published by City Lights Books. He will be speaking tonight right here in Santa Fe, New Mexico, at the Center for Contemporary Arts at 7:30. Welcome, David.
Thank you. Good morning. It's always a pleasure to be on KSFR.
It is indeed, and we're only sorry you're not here partaking of buttery pastries with us. Let's see. This book, Targeting Iran, is a set of essays by you and then Noam Chomsky, Ervand Abrahamian, and Naheed Mozafari. Tell us about these essays. Chomsky's book, first of all, starts with the contention that U.S. policy toward Iran has been fairly consistent for the last half century. What is that policy?
Well, of course, the strategic oil and natural gas reserves of Iran have always been a target for the United States. This is the so-called national interest, and in fact is the interests of ExxonMobil and Halliburton and Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman. That is a term of propaganda. Iran is not threatening the United States in any way whatsoever. Nevertheless, the rhetoric coming from Washington, particularly in this last week, when Bush, again, before some very carefully pre-selected military and retired military audiences, is very, very disturbing. It seems that the Bush administration wants to ratchet up not just the rhetoric, but really is seeking some kind of military confrontation with Iran to blame Iran for the absolute catastrophe of what has happened in Iraq. And a consequence of such military action, I think, will be disastrous for the Iranian people, for the entire region. The rivers of blood now flowing in Iraq will turn into oceans of blood in the Middle East. And New Mexicans, who are now and rightfully complaining about $3 a gallon gasoline, will look back at $3 a gallon with great nostalgia when oil goes to $100 and $200 a barrel, and the local price at the pump will, you know, double, triple, perhaps even quadruple. So the question is, why is the Bush White House, which has, you know, some problems on its hand, let me put it that way, and with more and more of its top officials jumping ship, Rove and Gonzalez, just in the last 10 days, why are they actively and aggressively pushing toward military confrontation with Iran? I think it's, you know, really to deflect a lot of the problems that they're having in Iraq. And they're looking now for a casus belli, that is, a reason to have a war with Iran. There is, you know, they'll find weapons with Iranian, you know, serial numbers on them. They'll find someone who says, you know, he's Iranian and he was sent there to train people to attack the United States. These things are easy to fabricate. And, you know, that's why, you know, I wrote this book to hopefully alert citizens to the impending war and to try and prevent it, because it will have just extremely deleterious consequences. Iran is not Iraq. Iran is a country of 70 million people. It has a very strong sense of national identity. Even people who oppose the government in Tehran of Mahmoud Ahmadinejad are very outspoken about this. If there is a U.S. attack, what the consequences will be. One of the people I quote in my introductory essay is Shireen Ebadi. She is the 2003 Iranian woman, distinguished human rights activist, a judge, a lawyer, she says that a U.S. attack would rally support for the government in Tehran. It will have the exact opposite effect because Iranians are nationalists, and she pleads with the United States not to do anything so reckless. So I think citizens should be concerned about the possibility of yet another war in the Middle East, which will lead to, as I said, disastrous consequences. Iran has allies and assets in Afghanistan, in neighboring Iraq as well, and it will be a very, very bloody situation for U.S. troops.
Let's go back, David, to the original question that I asked you, which is Chomsky says that U.S. policy toward Iran has been consistent for the last 50 years. What is that policy? What has been the United States' stance toward Iran in the last five decades?
Iran, like other countries in the Middle East, is seen from the point of view of U.S. policymakers as a kind of extra on the global tapestry of U.S., I will call it, imperial interests. The drive to control oil and natural gas is what informs U.S. foreign policy, particularly in the Middle East. Of course, on a rhetorical level, it's all about democracy and freedom and liberation and these noble ideas, but those are just that's just the propaganda veneer. What has been consistent since the overthrow of the first democratic government in Iran in 1953 of Mohammad Mossadegh by the Eisenhower-directed CIA coup has been to keep Iran within the U.S. orbit of control. Now, Iran broke out of the U.S. orbit in the Islamic Revolution of 1979 when it overthrew the U.S. puppet, the satrap, the Shah of Iran, and introduced a new form of government in Iran that was very hostile to the United States, that viewed the coup in 53 quite rightly as something that had extremely deleterious effects for the Iranian people. It arrested democracy. It destroyed the one possibility for real democratic development in that country. The ensuing hostage crisis of 1979 is about the only thing Americans over a certain age group know about Iran today. They may have heard of Ahmadinejad. They certainly cannot pronounce his name. And that hostage crisis, which also has its origins in the 53 coup because it was the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, which was the locus for the coup makers, for the CIA plotters. And so the Iranian revolutionaries in 1979 were worried, with some reason, that the exact same thing would happen again, that there would be a counter coup, and the Shah would be brought back yet again to resume power. So the policy has been consistent, as has been the rhetoric.
We're talking to David Barsamyan. His book is called Targeting Iran, and he's going to be speaking at the Center for Contemporary Arts at 7:30 tonight right here in Santa Fe. Reading your book, reading the news as much as I'm able to find news that really addresses this in a rational way, one can think the United States has made a mess in Iraq, but to some extent they're getting what they want, which is control of the oil in Iraq. But the mess is clear, the catastrophe is clear, and one wonders if targeting Iran isn't like fighting one fire by making another fire. What do you think is the strategic and, the larger concept behind invading or bombing a country like Iran right now?
Well, from the point of view of Washington policymakers, the threat of independent nationalism has, whatever stripe it may be, whether it's the Sandinistas in Nicaragua, whether it's Castro in Cuba, whether it's the New Jew movement in Grenada, whether it's Allende in Chile or Arbenz in Guatemala and Nasser in Egypt and on and on, Nehru in India. The threat of independent nationalism has always been viewed by Washington policymakers as very, very dangerous to U.S. hegemonic interests. Now, that threat could be left, right, center, whatever. The United States does not want independent forces rising anywhere in the world because of the threat of a good example. I mean, to really understand United States foreign policy, one simply has to watch a single episode of The Sopranos. For those of you listeners who have, you know, HBO, or, you know, even if you don't have HBO, if you've seen The Godfather with Marlon Brando and Al Pacino, then you understand the essence of how U.S. foreign policy works. That is, as long as you are loyal and pay homage to the Don, to the capo, to the leader of the mafia, or in this case, Washington, the so-called leader of the free world, then you are honored, you are celebrated, you are cuddled and supported and protected. But the moment you break from the Don's suzerainty, the moment you step out and say, hey, I want to create my own independent family, I want to do things the way I see fit, then the Don reacts with tremendous violence and intolerance. That's why someone like Jean-Bertrand Aristide of Haiti had to be deposed. Hardly anyone, threatening the United States in any way, but the threat is of a good example. And so independent nationalism, whether it was Mohammad Mossadegh in Iran in 1953 or even today, as rotten as the regime is in Tehran, and it is a rotten regime, it's guilty of enormous human rights violations. There are huge problems inside of Iran, but it is seen by Washington as a locus of independent nationalism, and it must be crushed. And that is primarily the force that drives not just this particular situation in Iran, but in general across the board.
We're talking to David Barsamian. Iraq and Iran have long been rivals for power in the region, you know, fighting wars and so on. With Iraq in shambles, Iran obviously has a power advantage. What do you understand is the U.S. vision for distribution of power if Iran is attacked?
Well, the U.S. is trying to create, first of all, a client state in Baghdad. This is as illusionary as its attempts to create client regimes, let's say, in Saigon. There are now, you know, attempts to sideline the government of Nur al-Maliki in Baghdad. There are all kinds of, you know, critical reports about how he's not up to the job and he's not meeting benchmarks. There's a vitriolic article and op-ed in this morning's Albuquerque Journal by the neocon stalwart Charles Krauthammer, and calling that for Maliki to be replaced. He's not, you know, he's not up to the task, according to Krauthammer and other neocons like Fred Barnes and Bill Kristol and Norman Podaritz and a whole slew of them. You can see them any night on many of them on Fox News. Now, what the U.S. of course would like is a quote unquote stable Middle East ruled by moderate regimes. Now, all of these things are in quotes. Moderate is another term of propaganda in U.S. discourse. It means anyone who adheres to Washington's diktats. Therefore, you can have a misogynist, racist, homophobic regime in Riyadh, in Saudi Arabia, called moderate and stable within this propagandistic construct. The same thing for Hosni Mubarak in Cairo, in Egypt. He's regarded as moderate and stable because he toes and spouts the U.S. line. The same thing with Abdullah in Jordan, etc. So the U.S. wants a set of client regimes in the region that will obey its orders, that will provide and protect oil, that will keep the price of oil at a manageable level, but certainly at a level that will fill the coffers of ExxonMobil and ConocoPhillips and Chevron and the other big U.S. oil conglomerates that are making money hand over fist. So strategically, the goal is to eliminate independent nationalism. That's why Syria is also the target of constant vitriol and vituperation, etc. It too resists Washington diktats and must be somehow sidelined. But Iran is the big threat. Iran is, according to the United States, even though the U.S. has completely surrounded Iran with, aircraft carrier battle groups, it has troops to Iran's east in Afghanistan, to the west in Iraq, to the north in Central Asia. Iran spends, incidentally, $5 billion on its military, $5 billion. The U.S. military budget is close to $750 billion. Nevertheless, we are to believe, as we were, misled once before, many times before, but most recently in Iraq, that Iran is posing a greater danger. As Cheney has said many times, it is a growing threat, and something must be done. And that something must be done, I think, may happen later this year or early next year. People in Iran, when I went there, are expecting a military attack.
And it's quite clear that it's coming out of Cheney's office, and that although we're not witness to it, there's quite a lot of controversy within the U.S. administration. Condoleezza Rice seems to not want to attack Iran. Dick Cheney's office does seem to want to. The Bush administration very recently, just a few weeks ago, suggested that it was going to declare the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, which is the military of the country, a terrorist organization, which would be the first time in history that a government's legitimate military would be labeled terrorist. That's a sign of what's going on. There have also been leaks that the White House is planning on launching a big anti-Iran media campaign very soon. Where does U.S. public opinion come down on all of this?
Well, right now, the propaganda has had an effect. Most Americans, in the most recent poll that I saw, regard Iran as the number one threat to the United States, as the country that poses the greatest danger. So, sadly, the propaganda campaign, which is not going to be launched, it has been in place for many, many months. The U.S. is actively spending hundreds of millions of dollars trying to destabilize the regime in Tehran by supporting, dissident groups or creating fake groups with fake puppets, sitting in, different Arab capitals or even in one case, Tel Aviv, and to try and overthrow the Iranian government. Imagine if Iran were funding tens of millions of dollars to dissident groups in the United States trying to overthrow the government in Washington. You can imagine what the response would be. As to the point of what the role of American public opinion, of course, it's difficult to say, because this administration, which is increasingly looking like a cross between Captain Ahab and Captain Queeg, two maniacal, homicidal captains, one of the Pequod and one of the Kane Mutiny, seems to totally disregard U.S. public opinion, totally disregards the Constitution, the U.N. Charter, international law, the Geneva Conventions. The dichotomy that you point out is very interesting, that, Condoleezza Rice seems to be more interested in a diplomatic, a more pacific approach to Iran, whereas Cheney seems to have never changed his more militaristic bent. In this entire discourse, what is missing is any mention of international law. zero mention of international law, whether it's in the Washington Post, the Albuquerque Journal, National Public Radio's All Things Considered and Morning Editions and the BBC. The planning and waging of aggressive war on a country that is not threatening you is the supreme international war crime. That is not being discussed at all.
Where does Europe come down on all of this?
Europe is very apprehensive, although there have been, you know, changes there in several governments, most specifically Merkel replacing Schröder in Germany and Sarkozy replacing Chirac in France. Both of those countries, which had been, of course, very strong and vocal in their opposition to the U.S. Almost unilateral attack on Iraq, have been kind of mincing their words about Iran. I think they're worried, as rightly they should be, because any kind of military action is going to dramatically escalate not just the price of oil, which I've mentioned, but also the level of violence. So the EU, incidentally, has a special kind of a group of three countries, it's Britain, France, and Germany, that was trying to act as an intermediary between the U.S. and Iran. But it seems that they've been sidelined by Washington. Iran was promised by the EU3, and this is mentioned in the book, Targeting Iran, that it would defend Iran against any kind of regime change. That has now been, taken off the boards. And Iran is rightly worried that, you know, it may be the target of a major bombing campaign. Seymour Hersh has written about this in The New Yorker. There has been much more reporting on this in the international press, particularly The Guardian and The New Statesman in Britain. Again, if you look, you know, outside the U.S. and between the lines in some independent media inside the U.S., you can find out exactly what the intentions of the Bush administration are. I think it's a very perilous time right now, not just in Iraq and Afghanistan, but in the entire Middle East. And it's very important that citizens make their views known to their senators here and Congress people in New Mexico that an attack on Iran is totally unjustified.
Now, David, would Congress have to approve this?
Well, again, in a regime that looks more and more like Captain Ahab and Captain Queeg, it's not clear whether they're even going to pay attention in the White House. They can just declare, look, I'm the commander-in-chief. We've found these weapons, or we've found these Iranians. They're killing our, you know, brave men and women in Iraq. You know, that trope that's repeated all over and over again, our brave men and women in harm's way who are defending our, you know, our country and expanding freedom and liberty. And we'll launch a unilateral attack without congressional approval.
But that would be very much against our own laws. Is that not correct? Our own constitution.
Well, not just the U.S. Constitution, but international law. Again, the supreme war crime, the crime that German generals and high state officials were accused and hung for at Nuremberg, was the planning and waging of aggressive war. But the president has a tremendous power. He is able to command the airwaves. He can go on TV tonight and say, my fellow Americans, we have found Iranians inside of Iraq killing American troops. I have decided to take action. Now, very significantly, about 3 months ago, when one of the many Iraq war appropriations bills was being passed, legislated in the Congress, there was a line in there that said specifically the United States cannot attack Iran without congressional approval. Nancy Pelosi removed that line.
What?
Under pressure from the White House, under pressure from people like Joe Lieberman, who's an extreme hawk on Iran and is calling for, you know, military action. It's also reported in The Nation magazine that the AIPAC, also that is the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, the most powerful branch of the what is called the Israeli lobby in Washington, actually actively pushed toward eliminating that particular sentence from the appropriations bill. I don't know if that's correct or not. That's what the Nation reported. But what we do know is that that language was stripped out of the legislation.
David Barsamian, unfortunately, we don't have time to go on any further. It's an important book. It's an interesting book. There's also a final chapter, which is an interview with, by you with Naheed Mozaferi, about poets and writers and the state of literature and so on in Iran today, which is very interesting. I encourage people to go to see David Barsamian tonight at the Center for Contemporary Arts in Santa Fe on Old Pecos Trail. That's at 7:30. David Barsamian, thank you so much for being with us.
Hey, thanks a lot, Mary Charlotte. And listeners can find out more at alternativeradio.org, alternativeradio.org.
Alternativeradio.org, and Alternative Radio is David Barsamian's program that he hosts every Tuesday night at 6:30 on KSFR. The book is called Targeting Iran, which is published by City Lights Books. We're going to take a little break right now, and when we come back, we'll be speaking of the arts with Robert Knott. Please stay tuned. I'd like now to welcome Robert Knott. He is the associate editor of the Pasatiempo, which is the Friday Arts Supplement in the Santa Fe, New Mexican, and he's here with us every Friday speaking of the arts. And some peaches have just landed on our desk.
That ain't too bad, is it? I like peaches. Thank you, whoever brought the peaches. Thank you. Well, they can't be listening to us because they walked away.
Yeah, he's not listening right now, but a listener brought peaches. Well, that's wonderful.
But what if I ate one of those peaches and, like, suddenly did something in my system? Not bad, not that somebody poisoned me, but, like, I was, regurgitated.
Well, we would hope that you wouldn't do that on the air.
Then I better wait till afterwards to eat these.
I think that would be an excellent idea, as the sound of peach slurping is not something that I had in mind for this particular segment.
All right, can I stick a couple of these in my pocket and take them home?
Yes.
Bernadette Peters is on the cover of the Pasatiempo this week. That's because she's going to be appearing at the Santa Fe Opera at 8 o'clock on Saturday night in a concert that benefits the Kitchen Angels. You know about the Kitchen Angels?
Yes.
And it's a great local nonprofit. And she will be doing her thing, called 986-5900. Read Craig Smith's Q&A with her in today's Pasatiempo. I like
Bernadette Peters. Peters is beautiful.
She's terrific. You get the sense she's a beautiful person underneath all the glitz and glamour.
You do.
And there is some nice glitz and glamour there.
Her husband died in a plane crash.
When?
A while back. It was very sad.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. What does that mean? We have to be sad all the time?
No. I think it was some years ago.
Okay, that's bad.
I mean, we can be sad, but it's not recent.
Okay. The Fiesta Melodrama continues at the Santa Fe Playhouse, 988-4262.
Have you seen it?
No, I haven't. Have you?
No, let's go to the melodrama.
Let's go to the melodrama and see them do antics. A foul, flim-flam, filcious fiestas to turn town into tourist trap. That's the title. I don't make these things up. Aspen Santa Fe Ballet has a mixed repertory performance. One of their ballerinas is retiring. Her name escapes me, which is unfortunate because I've interviewed her. Craig Smith interviewed her, though, in today's Pasatiempo. She's saying goodbye with these performances, 8 o'clock tonight and Saturday at the Lenzic. You know the phone number, 988-1234. We can't say prices on the community radio station, so you have to figure that out for yourself. But if it's free, I'll mention it. Meanwhile, tonight's Friday night, and that means you've got lots of arts openings. Pop Gallery, for instance, a fairly new gallery on Water Street, has paintings by Lyndon St. Victor, reception 5 to 7 p.m., Touching Stone off Old Santa Fe Trail has Kakishibu, which is traditional Japanese persimmon tannin dye works by an artist named Masamichi Terada. The reception is 5 to 7 p.m. tonight. The show runs through September. Gaybert Contemporary, 544 South Guadalupe Street, has Dirk de Brucker, new paintings, reception 5 to 7. Lou Allen Contemporary has a show of Robert Natkin's color works, and Elizabeth Cook Romero, staff writer for Pasatiempo, did a piece on that. And tonight's the Palace Avenue Arts Walk. If you want to walk downtown to some of the art galleries like Manitou and Patina and Peterson Cody, they all have openings. I think they have openings. It's usually the first Friday but this isn't the first Friday. It's the last.
So very true.
Somebody double-crossed me. Meanwhile, Skiers Ridge has Artifacts from Another Planet, Collage, Print, and Mixed Media by Patricia Pierce, and Solar Plate Etchings by Abigail Hansen. Artifacts is spelled ARTAFACTS. Reception 5:30 to 7:30. They're out on Cerritos Road near the pantry.
That's a cute little play on words.
It is?
Artifacts.
Well, I didn't make it up. Somebody else did. Yeah, I figured. She wouldn't say nothing about me doing something like that.
You would never play with words.
No, you're right. I'm too busy toying around with other stuff.
What other stuff?
Don't initiate stuff with me here.
What do you mean by stuff?
Don't instigate. My mother used to say those. She'd say, stop instigating. I thought that was a great term. I looked it up in the dictionary a couple of weeks ago. It was pretty interesting. Do you know what the Fibonacci sequence is?
What, you didn't read the Da Vinci Code, Robert?
All right, look, there's a few books I meant to get around to reading since I was a little kid, and one of them was the Da Vinci Code, and one was Jaws, and one was the Bible. I swear I'm going to read these one of these days. The Fibonacci sequence, what do you know about it?
Well, it's a mathematical sequence that is the basis of a lot of the forms that we actually see in the natural world, like fractals.
What?
Go on. What do you want to say about the Fibonacci
sequence? Well, there's a show at St. John's College. It's called the Fibonacci Sequence. St. John's College 7th Annual All Alumni Art Show. It's a reception tonight at 5 o'clock through 8 o'clock. The show runs through September 15th. St. John's is on Camino Cruz Blanca. It's in the Peterson Student Center. It's free. It's tonight. And what I know about it is this guy Fibonacci, who was like an Italian from like a few hundred years ago or something, maybe even B.C., who knows. Once it gets to like before...
They didn't have Italy, B.C.,
well, be that as it may, what I know is it's a group of numbers, and like each number is in the sequence is like the result of the two previous numbers added together.
Excellent.
Well, it's excellent, but what does that mean? All right, so 3 is the combination of 2 and 1, but what other numbers would be in there? 8 wouldn't be in there because 8 would be 7 and 6. You can't do that. And my question is, what good does a sequence like this do?
Well, actually, that's the amazing thing, is that it's the series, you add each number to the one before it. So 1 added to the number before it is 0. So the next number is 1. Then after that, you have 2, which is 1 and 1. After 1 and 2 makes 3, 2 and 3 makes 5, 3 and 5 makes 8, 5 and 8 makes 13, and so on. And that's just a nice little mathematical series. But it actually plays out in nature to make shapes like... snail shells and
now, this is great.
And all sorts
snails.
Of other things. Well, you know,
snails
that spiral.
Wall know about this thing more than I do. They know the Fibonacci sequence. I can't.
What do you want from me?
I don't know. That's no wonder I'm in debt counseling with that. The 8th Annual Thirsty Ear Festival. That's music. South by Southwest is involved. The Ryan McCarthy Band's involved. They're starting tonight, 6:30 p.m. The doors kick open at 6. It's at Eve's Movie Ranch, south of town. You can get in cheaper with 2 donated cans of food. You got to pay without the cans. You can get a 3-day camping permit. Here's a phone number for you, 473-5723.
You read that so nice and slowly.
Well, thank you. 988-1234. It's 3 days of music, music, music. Robert Benziger wrote some pieces about it in today's Posse Tempo. I'll read all about it. It's a 3-day event out at the movie ranch.
Hey, by the way, if you ever have thought of owning a Harley Davidson, you can buy a raffle ticket for 2 chances to win a brand new Harley Davidson as part of Open Hand's 30th anniversary celebration. There's going to be a fundraiser on Sunday, September 23rd, but you can buy your tickets before that. You can also buy tickets to the fundraiser. The number to give them a call is 428-2364.
That's nice.
There's going to be a champagne brunch and the inevitable silent auction.
That's pretty good. I wonder how anybody figures anything out if nobody's talking.
Labor Day. It's because they're able to read.
There we go again. Just an innocuous comment that has loaded with innuendo, not to mention, what's that word, ennui?
What?
Labor Day Blues Festival. That's Sunday at the Quad at the College of Santa Fe. There's more music with the Hoodoos, Alex Mario, Cadillac Bob and the Rhinestones, and Larry Friedman. 2 to 6 p.m. Sunday. You got to pay to get in. 505-255-9798. Maria Benitez is still dancing at the Lodge at Santa Fe. I got to get up there and see her.
This is the last weekend.
Yikes.
Isn't it?
Either this or next.
I think it's this one.
Do you know what Avi's Mambo Room is?
I certainly do. Straight ahead salsa dancing on a large dance floor with DJ Mambo spinning from 9:30 to 1.
Hey, Mambo.
There's a free class of New York salsa, well, it's free with the paid admission, Mambo, of New York style salsa from 8:30 to 9:30, and then the dancing goes from 9:30 on. It's at Cloud Cliff. And it's this Saturday night, tomorrow, at Cloud Cliff on 2nd Street. And if that's not enough salsa for you, we don't usually announce Albuquerque events, but I just can't help it. El Gran Combo de Puerto Rico is playing this tonight at the Hispanic Cultural Center in Albuquerque. And they are probably the world's most famous salsa band. They started in 1962, and they've been going strong ever since. The original musical director, keyboard player, is still directing and playing keyboards for the orchestra, but there's many, many other people who have sort of come and gone. And they are fabulous. They've toured all over the world. And it's called El Gran Combo, and it's at 7:30 tonight, and I believe Yvonne Ulibarri and Café Mocha are opening for them.
Whoa, pretty good stuff if you want to dance. There's also Fiesta Reggae happening on Thursday night. It's a concert with Jamaican singer Isaiah Mentor and local group Brotherhood Sound System. They're going to be at the Tin Star at 9 o'clock on Thursday night. You've got to pay to get in. Meanwhile, Sally Moore, if you're looking for more intellectual discussion of stuff happening around New Mexico, she's going to be talking about her book, Backroads and Byways of New Mexico, Drives, Day Trips, and Weekend Excursions, 7 o'clock Wednesday night at the Borders over on Montezuma Avenue. That's the same night, by the way, that Lucky Dubé is going to perform, the reggae artist, 6 p.m. at the Santa Fe Brewing Company on Fireplace. Got to pay to get in, call the Lensic. And that's the same night that Santa Fe's Garage Rock Reunion, with performance by Blood Drained Cows, High Octane Hell Ride, The Floors, and, my favorite title, Monkey Shines. 8 o'clock at CK's Nightclub, that's Wednesday night. Rob DeWalt wrote about it in his Soundwaves column, which runs in the calendar section of the Pasa Tiempo.
And by the way, Leonardo DiCaprio's film The 11th Hour,
Absolutely.
About which we talked yesterday with Kenny Ausubel, director of Bioneers, last night was the big opening at the Center for Contemporary Arts, and then tonight through Sunday, and then Monday through Thursday, it's continuing to show at the Center for Contemporary Arts.
Excellent. Another movie that I recommend at the Film Center is called Steal a Pencil for Me. It's a really interesting, I know it sounds depressing, story of three people who were in a concentration camp during the Holocaust. This guy, his wife, and his girlfriend. It's told in a really interesting style. It's very compelling. It's at the Film Center. I should also mention Halloween, the remake. I didn't like the original because it scared me. Now they're redoing it with Rob Zombie on board. And I have to go see this movie called Balls of Fury this weekend. It's about a ping pong tournament and the losers get killed. It's a comedy. I love that stuff. Christopher Walken's in it. They always give me the smart movies.
You just like it because it's called Balls of Fury.
No, I just like it because it's got ping pong and stuff. I used to be really good at ping pong. I played all the time in the basement. I was locked in there for about 4 years. So, what else is happening?
Buddha's Lost Children is the North American theatrical premiere, and that's at the CCA also, Friday through Sunday at 2:30 in the afternoon.
Oh, they haven't found him yet, huh? Guy's been running that movie for years. You think by now found the kids.
This movie has actually been running for a while.
All right, do you know about the Egyptian exhibit over at the Museum of New Mexico?
I don't know, but I bet we're about to find out.
We certainly are.
Actually, we're going to be talking about that in a couple of weeks right here on Radio Cafe.
Because the show runs through January. It opens at noon Saturday, September 1st.
Excavating Egypt.
Excavating.
Isn't that what it says? Isn't that what the title of the show is?
I guess you're right. Does that mean they're digging for stuff?
I would think it does.
Anyway, they're bringing all this stuff from the London Museum, the Petrie Museum. Petrie was this character. He was around in the 1800s and the 1900s. And he went into the esophagus of the mummy and all that to dig out stuff. He found ancient jewels and...
Did you just say esophagus?
Crustaceans and stuff like that. The stuff you always find when you go digging. The thing is, there's no mummy.
When you meant sarcophagus?
That too. There's no mummy in the exhibition, which I find very good. Interesting, because a mummy always gets loose and attacks people, which, by the way, I wrote about in today's Pasa Tiempo.
Hey, you wrote a whole dog story last week, and you didn't even tell us about it.
That's because it wasn't related to a local event. It was about a book called The Best Dog in the World. The author's not signing here, but it was a good little story I did because I thought it was a really interesting book by 10 Speed Press, Donna Long, and it's images, great images, from like the 1880s to 1925 of children and dogs.
I know, but you didn't
huge
even talk about it. This is all dog radio.
Sitting with babies, swaddling babies.
Exactly.
And anyway, 10 Speed Press, last week's post, I apologize, it wasn't related to an event in Santa Fe, and that's usually what I focus on. Which gets me back to the Pharaohs and all that, and the Pharisees, which is the plural of that. I know my smoting and smiting, believe me. Excavating Egypt, great discoveries from the Petrie Museum of Egyptian Archaeology, University College London. Open Saturday at the museum in New Mexico. If you want to see Egyptian stuff, go down there. I got a preview of it. It's a really great exhibit, and Paul Weideman wrote a really nice story in today's PASA about it, and I wrote a fun story about the mummy getting loose and chasing people, which happens only in real life to me. So go down there to the museum. Meanwhile, what else were you going to talk about? Weren't you going to say something to me about the spirit of Abiquiu?
The spirit of Abiquiu?
Yeah, ghosts.
Why now?
Well, that's good, because I wasn't going to mention it either. There's a lot of music tonight. Tim Valentine's at Body, 6:30 p.m. Three Faces of Jazz are at Chispa del Mesón. Robert Capocci is doing Spanish guitar at the Dragon Room, which is in the Pink Adobe.
Roberto Capocci?
Yeah, him too.
Amazing. He's not playing tonight.
He's not?
I don't think so.
Uh-oh. We might have it wrong in Paso Tiempo. That occasionally happens, and sometimes it's our fault, and sometimes it's their fault, but let's find out. Amazing Larry at Evangelos. He does 80s rock and originals. DJ John Edwards, not to be confused with the presidential candidate or that guy that calls the dead back to life on that TV show. Did you ever watch him?
Why, no.
He's an interesting guy. Those guys never get enough credit. Anyway, DJ John Edwards is at Fusion tonight. He's doing hip-hop, 9:30 p.m. Antonio Mendoza is doing Spanish music at Los Mayas. Billy D's rocking at the Ore House at 3:30, and the Hoodoos are coming in at 8 at the Ore House. Meanwhile, the Tin Star tonight are the Jakes, classic rock, 9 o'clock. And if you want a little more subtle piano music to go with your cocktails, champagne, and scintillating conversation, Doug Montgomery on the piano, followed by Charles Tishner on the piano at Vanessi tonight, starting at 6, going through closing. That's a nice little bar to sit at. I hate getting thrown out of there, because then I can't go back.
Exactly. That's not good. Hey, there's a few tickets left for the Santa Fe Conservation Trust annual Stuart Udall Environmental Award dinner, held on Sunday, the 9th of September, from 5 to 8 in one of Santa Fe's most beautiful garden courtyards. Honorable Stuart Udall, former Secretary of the Interior, this is named after him. There's a catered dinner by the Cowgirl Restaurant. David Geist will be performing at the piano. And if you want more information, you can call 989-7019. And it's all of this is to support the Trust's mission to protect Santa Fe's natural and undeveloped lands and create trails and stuff like that.
That's pretty good stuff. They should have stuff like that, don't you think?
They should. I go hiking with my little doggies on public trails all the time, and it's great.
And what happens?
Well, then it's just good exercise for humans and canines.
Okay.
And it's beautiful, and you can look at this incredible landscape that we live in.
If you want to go to Fiesta de los Niños this weekend, it's out there at that El Rancho de los Colondrinas. And they've got art activities and costume party. They've got storytelling, magic shows, a parade. There's puppets, food concessions. There's going to be Peruvian paso horses. Do you know what those are?
I've seen them. I don't know that much about them. They have a very special gait, which is more for show than for practicality.
You mean you walk up to the gate and you can bite a fence for the show? Why do you want to look at the horses for if they have a special gate? I got a gate outside my house.
That's a homonym.
Doesn't keep the... That's a what?
It's G-A-I-T, not G-A-T-E.
Homonym, huh?
That's a homonym.
Well, I know my homonyms better than I know my synonyms.
It's like an ad hominem argument.
Santa Fe Artist Market's going on at Casa Solana Shopping Center at 901 West Alameda Street, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday. Swing by there. They used to be in the rail yard, but now they're over on Alameda by the, what's the name of that, not Whole Foods, but Wild Oats, and also the laundromat where I do my laundry. I love that place. I go in there and read. They always got these ladies' magazines. It's a good place to read them, because otherwise people think you're weird if you pick up Cosmopolitan.
You talk about your laundromat quite a lot on this show.
Well, I do laundry a lot. I can't help it. I'm a clean guy. I may have some...
If you're such a clean guy, why do you do laundry all the time?
Maybe I'm of limited clothing wear. Maybe I'm one of those guys that lives like a Buddhist. Maybe I'm one of Buddha's lost children. I live a very simple life. I got Martha Stewart furniture in my apartment and Motel 6 art on my walls, and I go to the laundromat a lot. All right, there you go. Why don't you go to the Cleveland Mill Fest? Get out of town. The historic Mora Valley Foundation presents this annual event. It's artists, it's foods, it's baked good, it's dance, it's live music. I've been up there. It's a lot of fun. It's the old mill in Cleveland, which is north of Mora, which is in turn north of Las Vegas. So it's about an hour drive or so, maybe an hour and a half, actually. It's like 100 miles away. Call 505-387-2645. Craig Smith did a little mixed media on it in today's Paso Tiempo. We don't have a full story on it, but you can certainly go check that out. I always mention the Sunday admission to the museums, free for New Mexico residents. I don't know if that's true for the excavating Egypt. They usually charge more to get into that section of the museum, but you can get into the museum itself if you are a New Mexico resident, free on Sundays. And Thursday night is what? Tell me what Thursday night is. Come on. Zozobra.
Ah, right.
Oh, ho, ho. They're going to burn him, don't you know? If you're visiting town or never been to Zozobra, all I can say is it's not a once-in-a-lifetime experience. You can go every single year. But
if you don't live here, it might be a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
Well, that'd be the same if I visited Gallup. You know, it's like a once-in-a-lifetime trip to Gallup.
You talk about Gallup a lot on
the
show, too.
Well, I'm going there someday. I'm going to go there someday after New Year's.
What do you mean? I thought you went there on your last vacation.
No, I ain't never been there. I got past Sutan. I picked up some gas there. Local restaurant.
There's cultural awareness programs and evening campfire programs every weekend at Bandelier National Monument. And so, for example, tonight is Legends in the Landscape with Ranger Ray, and then tomorrow, Wild About Bandelier with Ranger King, and then Sunday, Colibri, the Little Warriors with Ranger Swift Pony. These are all evening campfire programs at the Juniper Campground Amphitheater. For more information, you can call the Visitor Center at 672-3861. That's at 8:30 in the evening. And there's also cultural awareness programs on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday with names like Santo Domingo Turkey Feather Blankets and Owinge Dance and things like that.
Huh.
Okay, Owinge Dance Group.
Along the same sort of artistic lines, so to speak, Donna Shear and Barbara Bentry are teaming up for a little cabaret show called All Right, So Now You Know. It's being called a musical cocktail for two. I'd rather have the real thing and have like six or seven of them and then try to dance. But anyway, what they did is they took Andrew Bovell's play Speaking in Tongues, they added music to it by people like Stephen Sondheim and Marilyn and Alan Bergman, and they put together a little review show over at the National Dance Institute of New Mexico at the Dance Barns on Alto Street. And the proceeds are going to help NDI scholarships for kids that want to learn how to dance. The show's tonight at 8, 5 p.m. Sunday, and then it's 8 o'clock again on September 7th and 8th. Here's a phone number for you, 983-7661. So, all right, now you know.
Hey, did we talk about the... never mind.
Did we? Too bad.
It was last week.
That happens. Verve has an opening of Elizabeth Opelenik's show, Poetic Grace. Verve's on Marcy Street, 219, across the street from the New Mexican. We are back downtown, 202 East Marcy Street. Come on.
How's your new digs?
We like our new digs. Speaking of digs, it's not too far from the museum where that mummy is. Yeah, the digs are great. Come by and say hello. Meanwhile, if you want to go over to the CCA, they're having poetry performances by Wanda Coleman and Ken Cormier, 7 p.m. Thursday, September 6th, which is the same time as Obra's burning up, at the Moving Image Lab at CCA, 1050 Old Pecos Trail, 982-1338, and Elizabeth Cook Romero wrote a little piece about the two poets in today's Paso. Yeah, so Thursday night, we're kicking off Fiesta, Zozobra. And
Course, the best part of Fiesta, as always, is the pet parade.
Well, that's good. Brooke Klinger. Brooke Klinger is the ballerina retiring from Aspen Santa Fe Ballet. I just remember. So that's the story in today's Paso. Hey, what time is it?
8:57.
Oh, my goodness. It's already time to say goodbye. You know what was on TV last night?
Law and Order.
3:10 to Yuma with Glenn Ford and Van Heflin. What a terrific Western. I turn it on to hear the theme song, then I turn it off, then I turn it on at the end to hear the theme song on the way out. It's a terrific movie. They're remaking it with Russell Crowe and Christian Bale, and that's going to open next week here in Santa Fe. It was shot in Santa Fe, the new one, but the old one was shot in old Tucson. I love that movie.
It's anyway. So easy to make you happy, Robert.
Well,
I find that endearing.
Cowboy movies, laundry, maybe a show about Sasquatch, a couple of young women going for a swim, things like that. That's always a lot of fun. Bernadette Peters, look at that shot. Look at that cover of the Paso Tiempo.
That's a beautiful shot. What was that Groucho Marx quote? All I need to be happy in life is a woman, a dog, and a book. And if I could get the dog to read the book, I'd be all set. Something along those lines?
I guess that's true. I should look that quote up.
We should look that up, Robert. We'll get it right next week. I can't remember the exact one.
And we have peaches. Thank you, Peach Man.
Thank you, El Tonto Vergüenza. And thank you, Robert Knott, for being with us here on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Robert Knott is the associate editor of the Paso Tiempo Friday Arts Supplement in the Santa Fe, New Mexican. He's here with us just about every Friday speaking of the arts. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can listen to the radio wherever you are on this beautiful green planet. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We're also podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org. That's my website where you can hear the show anytime you want to listen, thanks to Santa Fe's Dot Foil Computer Services. and you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Thanks to Laurel Reynolds for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, Jazz a la Carta with Ricardo Perez.
When the 310 to Yuma whistles its sad refrain, ooh, take that train. That's a great song. Frankie Lane. Anyway, it was good being here. Am I coming back next week? Or are we going to do the Fiesta show?
Yeah, we're going to do the Fiesta show.
All right, I'll show up.
Wonderful to have you, Robert.
You're
everybody,
peach.
Be happy, be peaceful.
Be
peaceful, eat your peaches. And we will see you on Monday, Labor Day.
I don't know why I'd want a dog in a book if he had a woman around.
I think that's the point.